Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Kobe after the canoe trip.
I want to go home. I want to go home!
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on the Twitter, at Matthew Sosi.
On that Twitter.
On the interwebs. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Now, I heard we are going to be revamping WFYI.org a little later on, probably in November. So we will hopefully revamp that as well. The voice you just heard, a man who started off the show with not one but two insider references before we even started talking. That's Kobe Slagle.
Hello.
Good to have you back, sir.
Good to be back.
Now, for those who are wondering what the heck that was after the introduction of my name, Mr. Yes. Slagle was not here last week. It was just Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap and I. Mm-hmm. Don't worry, we filled the hour. It was okay. But you and your lovely and some other lovely people in your world went camping.
Yes, we did.
You did. Outdoors. Serious camping.
Yes, we did.
See, my running joke, of course, is my version of camping is basic cable.
At the Motel 6.
At the Motel 6. Yeah, you're roughing it if you're at the Motel 6. Doesn't have the peppermint-scented soap and shampoo that I enjoy so much. But no, you are actually on an air mattress in a tent.
Yep.
Outside.
Which some say
in the rain.
An air mattress is, oh, that's not rough.
But yes, but you're not Jeremiah Johnson.
No,
You're not Grizzly Slagle. But how long did it last?
Got there Friday night at 8:30. Left Sunday morning at about 8:30. 36 hours.
Wow, that you'll never get back.
Nope.
But everybody involved now knows you don't need to go camping for a while.
Nope. So. Nope. I'm good.
Good. That's good. So let's see. Horror movies, camping.
Freaky stuff in general.
Freaky stuff in general. And apparently, because it's opening next week, Austin Land. So we will get... why don't you give Curtis a rest?
Luckily, there's so much going on next week.
There is a lot going on.
We'll
miss it next
week.
Now, are you on the show Friday?
No, I will not be here next Friday.
You will not be here.
I will not be here next
again.
Friday. Again.
What could possibly have you get away from Film Sociology for the second time in 3 weeks? What? Why are you not here on Friday?
Well, next Friday I'll be attending to various miscellaneous chicanery involving...
Little of this, little of that.
Little of this, a little of that, involving the impending nuptials of Fair Sweet Bianca and myself on Sunday, September 15th.
Now, for the record and full disclosure, I'm one of the groomsmen, so I'm giving Kobe a lot of grief. But the show must go on, so I will do it, and I'll hopefully have somebody here. Ed Johnsonat, actually, from Nubo.
Ah, very good.
We saw him. He was also at the Austin Land screening with me this morning.
I would love to hear what he has to say about
Oh,
that.
Well, you will when you tune in to WFYI.org or WFYI HD2 right now or Sundays at 4 o'clock. We haven't done, not this weekend and not next weekend, but
no.
we will do sometime, ladies and gentlemen, we will do a whole separate new Film Sociology on a Sunday afternoon.
Bum, bum, bum.
And if you hear it and you email me at msoci@wfyi.org and let me know that you are listening to the new live show on Sunday afternoon.
Or if you send him a tweet at Matthew Soci.
If you do that, WFYI.
Get our social media people engaged.
We are. Film Sociology and in conjunction with WFYI will send you a prize package of some kind. We're not going to tell you.
What'll they win?
Who knows? That's the beauty of this program, because one week or after another, you never know what we're going to really talk about here on Film Sociology.
I like Film Sociology, but sometimes it gets too inside jokey.
Yeah, that's us. Yeah, we haven't discussed food and sports yet.
No, we haven't. We're nearly 6 minutes in, and we haven't covered that yet.
Boy, we have not covered the
Hey, football started up.
Yes,
fantasy football started up. Thus, the Silver State game. Silver State game IV. Is coming up.
And what is the record of the Silver Stakes game?
Two for the Tommy Wiseau All-Stars, one for Zazu Zazu.
Okay. So, because really the only reason why we play is to beat Zazu Zazu.
That's what we
It's not really. It's like getting on the highlight reel at the end of the year. It's all you really do.
That's what everybody plays for.
Right. So, yeah. That's
but there can only be one Silver State game.
There is. Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with the Flower Foot game between Tracy
the Manassas
Mitchell
Meat Sweats.
And yours truly. So it'll be a lot of fun. But yes, go Lions. Please, let's do better. Let's do better than last year.
The Royal Lions
My
team.
My gosh. Okay. A little later on in the show, in the second half of the program, I will have a chat with Indiana actor, musician, and overall Renaissance guy.
Oh, I thought you were going to say overall pretty cool guy.
He is a pretty cool guy. It's Tim Graham, who if you know his music, his folk music, and you might have seen him on stage at IRT on several occasions. So he is in the film. He has a couple of scenes in the film At Any Price with Dennis Quaid and Zac Efron, and that came out on DVD and Blu-ray last week. And this has been one of my top surprise films of 2013. And Tim got to be a part of that. So you hear me talk to Tim about At Any Price and a number of the, oh, there's Tim. And he's appeared in films like Clear and Present Danger, The Insider, Public Enemies, lots of things, lots of television. So it'll be cool. Oh, Backdraft. He appears in a couple scenes in one scene, I believe, in Backdraft. So it's kind of, hey, it's that guy.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
no. So we'll talk to him about that in a little bit. And, of course, we do have a scene. We have an audio clip involving the dead person we like. Well, dead person I like, David Frost. I want to talk about so an excuse to play a scene from Frost Nixon. Okay, opening in theaters today. Well, there's really one title that opened up because nobody wanted to go up against Vin Diesel in September, but Riddick.
Not Vin Diesel in September.
A day that we'll always remember. But yes, it's Riddick. It is. You got that. You thought of the bass line first, didn't you?
Oh, man. That was good.
Great bass line. Great guitar wah-wah.
Great band, period.
Great band, period. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, well, yes, Riddick. It's a film starring and also produced by Vin Diesel, because who else would ask for a third Riddick film?
All right.
But it is same writer-director, given that. But it is, man, this is, I was concerned I was going to have to watch Pitch Black and then Chronicles of Riddick again. You know why? Because Pitch Black came out in 2000, and that, for a lot of people, is what people say that got Vin Diesel on the map. But Chronicles of Riddick was...
I thought Fast and Furious is what got Vin Diesel on the map.
No,
did that come first?
No, I think Pitch Black came first. Hmm. Actually, while this is playing, Mr. Slagle, I would ask you to pull up Mr. Diesel's IMDb page.
Mr. Diesel.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Vin. Or is I actually called him Van on Fox 59 once. That's how long ago. No, because Fast and Furious... No, it was XXX that... we slammed pretty hard on Fox 59 AM a decade ago. Okay, so, but yeah, 9 years since we left off with Chronicles of Riddick. So a lot has happened except for aging in Vin Diesel's part.
He was in Saving Private Ryan.
He was in Saving Private Ryan. We'll get to his IMDb page in a bit. But first, let's play some audio. Do you want to break down the audio? You haven't done that in a while.
We can break down the
really?
Audio.
Really? You're a little rusty.
Well, I don't know.
And you're a little rusty.
We'll see what happens. You ready?
Yeah, let's see.
Here we go.
Go for it.
I bet it starts with a oh, so good.
Don't know how many times I've been crossed off the list.
Monosyllabic breakdown.
So this.
Is this his last
this
job?
Nothing new.
It's nothing new. Same stuff, different.
Bounty hunters.
Still.
I
I've been hunting ready for 10 years.
Exposition. Plot things.
He's the most dangerous man we've ever tracked.
Character things.
Bounty's been doubled.
I've come to collect your head in a box. Right here.
So yet again.
Confrontation.
For blood.
Catchphrase.
This is a man who sees in the dark.
Pitch black. Rock music in 3.
So watch out
two,
for surprise attack.
1.
What is it?
After the catchphrase. Oh.
You're locked. It's okay.
Run out!
Tame.
1 down.
Catchphrase.
3 down. You get where I'm going with this.
Why are his eyes white?
Because he sees in the dark.
Again!
Electronic future weapons.
Pew, pew, pew.
Vin Diesel laughing.
Crash, industrial metal sounds.
What is happening?
No heavy rock. Catchphrase.
Yeah, let's cut him loose.
Things are getting a little more complicated.
Alex Lifeson can do this on guitar.
Still crashing.
Fight scenes are great on trailers. Trailer audio fodder on radio.
You're not afraid of the dark, are you?
Because it's pitch black. Yeah.
All right.
We haven't broken down an action trailer in a while, and now we know why.
Chronicles of Riddick into Pitch Black 2000 TV movie. Boiler Room 2000.
Well,
Pitch Black 2000, Fast and Furious 2001.
So we were right. So yeah, Pitch Black is what put him on the map. We'll get to his resume in a little bit. As I said before, I don't think I've ever even seen Pitch Black. And I remember the only thing I remember about Chronicles of Riddick, it was too long and too slow, and it cracked me up because Judi Dench was in it. And you knew she was getting a big check because of appearing in this. So I was worried am I going to have to watch these
Wait
two
a minute.
Films?
Vin Diesel was not in any of the Fast and Furious except for, oh.
Can I finish? I continue with the review while you're studying?
Going. I'm confused here.
Yeah, I know that. So let's shake off the trailer analysis and we'll work on. So I was worried. I wasn't sure if I had to watch Pitch Black and Chronicles of Riddick again. Fortunately, ladies and gentlemen, you do not. Apparently it does loosely pick up where the end of Chronicles of Riddick left off, which for the life of me, I don't remember. And it's really okay. It's him, you know, at the beginning, it's him stuck on some planet, some desert planet, and he's being attacked by space things and plot things happening after around him. And then, and eventually he is, as you see in the trailer, which you can't see on radio, he's captured and they're kind of stuck in one room and out the outside creatures, lots and lots of creatures, by the way, start coming after him. And it's that point in the film, which is about halfway through, that it starts to feel like Rio Bravo. Or Assault on Precinct 13, the original John Carpenter version, not the not good remake that came out, a decade ago. I remember the Onion, this week, because of Riddick, did a breakdown of a number of space westerns. And this kind of feels like, because you have two groups of people coming after Riddick. You know, the French guy who wants his head in a bat, in a box, and then the other guys that were from the last film. And by the way, Carl Urban shows up in one scene. I don't even remember him being in Chronicles of Riddick. I just thought, oh, here's Bones in a... Well, he is. He's not playing Bones in this. He played Bones in Star Trek earlier this year. Surprisingly enough, and I guess to use the Charles Barkley phrase, this film was not terrible. It's
I'm sorry.
No,
I
you know, no, because
I was mesmerized by something else over here.
Well, we'll get to that in a little bit. The film is too long. It's not perfect. It's too long. This thing
is not terrible.
No, but it's 2 hours long, and it could be 30 minutes shorter easily. The first 20 or so minutes, which is almost silent, which is saying a lot since Vin Diesel is known for monosyllabic dialogue.
Wow, that'd be some good filming then, Mr. Soci.
See, now you're just playing. Let me finish. It takes a while for it to get going. Once everybody is stuck in the one room and the guns come out, then it gets exciting. It's not the most perfect filming. There's a lot of, the darn kids with your ADD induced editing. It's not quite Michael Bay bad as far as action scenes. But when you have Vin Diesel and you have a wrestler, I can't remember which pro wrestler it is. Joe Shearer will probably correct me on that. But when you have a big fight scene, I want to see it, and you sort of see it, but not enough. So it's not perfect, but it's not god awful. And I remember Chronicles of Riddick being god awful, even though I just remember Judi Dench for the most part. So okay, now you have Chuck's thing there.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not it.
That's not terrible. Yeah.
Not terrible. Think less. Just think less about this film, and the better you'll be off for it. So, okay, you were astounded by something. You were looking in amazement. What's up?
Yes, well, I was checking out the lineup that is going to be in town this weekend for Horror Hound.
Oh, Horror Hound. Should we break that down now, or should we go over to Vin Diesel's page?
Oh, let's go. Let's talk about Vin Diesel,
okay,
since we're already here.
Because... So he is now, I want to talk about the non-Fast and Furious Riddick films that he has worked on, because really that's been his bread and butter.
Fast and Furious and Riddick, yeah, pretty much.
Because he, became a name because of Riddick, became a star because of Fast and Furious, then he did Triple X, and then he demanded so much money that they didn't bring him back for the second Triple X film. So, Vin Diesel turns into Ice Cube. No, it's a new Triple X. Just like Sean Connery turned into George Lazenby. Which, by the way, you still need to watch that sometime, fool. I'm talking to Kobe, ladies and gentlemen.
We have A Man Apart in 2003.
Didn't like that. Cop movie, wasn't crazy about it. And what was before that? Because
Triple X was right before that. Knock Around Guys in
2001. Yeah, Knock Around Guys was it's just kind of ensemble crime film, yeah, wanting to be Pulp Fiction.
But then, I mean, before that, we're right back at the premiere, The Fast and the Furious.
Fast and, yes, he lives his life
Triple
a quarter
X,
mile at a time. Got it.
Yep. Video game, Riddick, Chronicles of Riddick in 2004. Another Riddick short in 2004, The Pacifier in 2005.
Yeah, he had to get a new audience. And
Find Me Guilty in 2006.
Now, pause there. Pause. And Ed Johnson and I were talking about that. We were talking about the careers of Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel, the fact that you have muscular guys that have been, for the last decade, the new wave of action heroes.
Are they the same person?
They're not the same person. I don't think Vin Diesel can body slam as well as Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne, you almost called him The Rock.
We talked wrestling. So, but say what you will about Vin Diesel's career, and we have, and we will, because there's a lot of cinematic wasteland out there. But sometime, if you haven't seen it, you should see Find Me Guilty, because it's directed by Sidney Lumet, one of my all-time favorite directors that we have talked about for a long time, and it's of course, like every other film, based on a true story. Diesel plays a mobster who is basically going to turn state's witness, but is a likable enough guy, and he represents himself in court, but still maintains a friendly relationship with the people he is pointing the finger at, even though they want to kill him. And it's one of those examples. It's like it's happened, I think, with somebody like Jim Carrey or Adam Sandler, but when you have an actual director telling you to do stuff, as opposed to, and I'm sure there's a number of movie stars, they could get a director that just lets the camera roll and lets the actor do whatever they want. But I think Sidney Lumet pushed Diesel to use the things that he is known for. Some folks would say he's charismatic. Of course, he's got his physicality, and he used it and geared it and steered it in the right direction. And I really liked him in Find Me Guilty. Dwayne Johnson, I think, has a better film resume. He's done a lot more. He's shown more layers as an actor compared to Diesel. But Vin Diesel will always work with Sidney Lumet. That will always be in his resume. So anyway, as you can tell, I really, really liked Find Me Guilty. It's the best Vin Diesel film. Go check it out. Continue.
After Find Me Guilty, we have The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, uncredited.
Yeah, the Fast and the Furious folks thought, oh, we can just put Paul Walker in a car, and now we'll just put Lucas Black. Not Lewis Black. That would be a different movie.
That would also be awful. Mm-hmm. 2008, Babylon AD.
Terrible.
And then 2009, we have...
We?
Yeah, we have Fast and Furious. Now, see,
so
this is where I was...
Four.
I was
that's
confused
the four.
Here. The premiere is The Fast and The Furious. This is just Fast and Furious.
So four. This is the fourth one. So never saw it.
Yeah, that was the fourth one.
Uh-huh. Then?
See, A Voice in a Video Game, A Voice in a Chronicles of Riddick video game. Here's something interesting. A video short in 2009 called Los Bandoleros, character Dominic Toretto, same character as Fast and the Furious.
Hola.
Indeed.
Interesting.
2011, Fast 5.
So there's 5.
2013, 6 Fast, 6 Furious.
So they got to have numbers in it just so we can keep them straight.
Riddick short, Blindsided in 2013. Riddick in 2013.
Yeah, so...
Pre-production.
No, we don't care. I don't care about pre-production.
We have 7 Fast, 7 Furious.
Who cares? No.
And XXX, the Return of Xander Cage. We were trying to think of what
Xander
his,
Cage.
Yeah, we were
That's
trying
right.
to think of what his name was.
Yeah, Ice Cube is not Xander Cage.
Yeah. Is his name XXX? No, it's That's, Xander Cage.
And I love XXX up in Lafayette. Bacon cheeseburger.
Peanut butter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should have those at your wedding.
Man, that would be so awesome.
Because we're going to Scotty's.
I know.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're not telling you when we're going to Scotty's. You're not going to interrupt the bachelor party. I might have to get that. Okay, so there you go. He's going back to his bread and butter when it's not being in a car. He's the guy who can see in the dark
and fight aliens.
It's not terrible. All right, let's take a short break. What time is it?
5:21.
Whew, exhausted. Let's take a break and we'll talk about what's on DVD and Blu-ray, and then we'll get to my chat with Tim Grimm. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
Thank you, Tyler. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at nsoci at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soci. Hanging out with Kobe Slagle at least for one more week before he isn't here next week.
Yep.
Week after, right? So the week after you will be here, and then the week after that you will not be here.
Correct.
Because you're going on the honeymoon.
Yes.
Boy, it's just... It's going to be an inconsistent show with you gone.
Yes, because as everybody knows, I'm the glue that holds it together.
You're the straw that stirs the drink. So I guess I'll be on that side of the board. That's okay. But yeah, interesting, because we, Mrs. Soci and I, did not go on our honeymoon until about 6 months after we got married. So good for you on
Where'd
that
Where'd you
one.
Go?
A week in London and a week in Paris.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Because as you know, honeymoons are a competition. So.
Well, where'd you guys go?
Where are you going?
Where are you two? We are going to Hawaii.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Bring back some Kona.
Very excited.
All right. So before we get to what's on DVD and Blu-ray and my chat with actor, musician Tim Grimm, Kobe, what is going on at IU Cinema, your alma mater?
At IU Cinema tonight, Friday, September 6th, 6:30 p.m., the National Film Board of Canada animated shorts program at 6:30.
Excellent.
And then at 9:30 in the International Art House series, Ain't Them Body Saints, 2013 drama.
Oh, okay.
Tomorrow.
So, I'm sorry, that's with Rooney Mara, Casey Affleck, Ben Foster, and Keith Carradine. Ain't Them Body Saints. Go on, okay.
3 o'clock, Saturday, September 7th, 1973 documentary F for Fake.
Ah, the Orson Welles documentary, whether it is or is not actually real, which is the subject matter that's been used in documentaries lately. Good.
6:30 p.m., 2006 drama, The Hoax.
With Richard Gere, about the gentleman who pulls a hoax, and he looks like Richard Gere.
Yep. And then rounding off again, 9:30, Ain't Them Body Saints. Sunday, 3 p.m., Ain't Them Body Saints, and then 6:30, Black Gold. That's
Texas
IU Cinema this weekend.
Okay. Lasse Hallström directed The Hoax. So I got a piece of mail. I should open it. I'm gonna be like Jim Rose.
Open this mail.
I'm gonna open this mail. It's phenomenal. Wow. I love getting stuff in the mail. Chainsaw Confidential: How We Made the World's Most Notorious Horror Movie by Gunnar Hansen. I believe this is the gentleman who plays Leatherface in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Wow, that's very cool. I didn't see this coming. So, and of course, on the envelope it says "Great for Halloween shows." So I got a month, of work. Now, that being said, at the end of the month, Sammy Terry will be returning to Film Sociology. Oh. He is because, as you said, it's that time of year for him again.
It's his time.
It's his busy season, and I know he's got a live show coming up at the end of the month with a band.
That's going to be awesome.
I think that would be very cool.
Where's that at?
I don't know. Go to Sammy Terry's webpage while I talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I have failed you as the guest host, or as the host slash producer slash wunderkid of Film Sociology. The big title that came out this week is Now You See Me, and I didn't get around to watching it. And partly because I was distracted by, it was very distracting, by three other films that came out this week that I really wanted to check out. So as you heard in previous shows, I was in a bad mood when I reviewed the initial release of Now You See Me, and I got a feeling that might have marred my decision with the film. So I want to watch it again when I'm in a better mood and see if that is true. Now, that being said, the big title for me that came out this week on Blu-ray and DVD, and I hope you check it out. It played here a little bit in Indy, but and it's funny you brought up the NFB of Canada. But the Canadian documentary Stories We Tell, written and directed by Sarah Polley, who made one of my favorite films of the decade called Away From Her. That's the one with Julie Christie. Basically, she makes a documentary about her family. Now, I know you're already imagining your own family in a documentary form, and you're saying to yourself, why would she do that? Because, well, every family has a story to tell. It's just that Sarah Polley tells her family story really well. She gets a number of people in the family and people in the family circle to participate. And there's questions. It talks about her mother dying when she was age 11 and the affair she had, and eventually brings up who is actually her father. So what she does with the film is Stories We Tell, meaning it's almost it's a documentary style of Rashomon, where this person's version of the story versus that person's version of the story versus this outsider's version of the same story. And now imagine your family doing that. This is what causes fights at homes during the holidays.
You remember that time? No, it wasn't like that.
You know, only better directed. And so I have to give Sarah Polley major props. It is at times heartbreaking. What you hear that her mother went through, she died of cancer at a very young age. And then the unraveling more of family secrets. Don't think about your own family secrets, but it is a really, really well-made documentary. I'm really hoping I can bring somebody on the show to talk about it. No offense to you, Cobe, because you haven't seen it. But it was really kind of took me aback. We'll get to the interview in a little bit. Also, I finally caught up with, because it came out on DVD this week, Sharknado.
Oh, yes.
Emma and I watch Sharknado. I'm a bad parent because I always told myself I was going to show Emma Jaws first. Plus, I didn't think she'd be interested in Sharknado.
You always told her since that one week in July when it was everywhere?
Yeah, I did, actually. So, no, she didn't know. She had heard about it because it became, you know, kind of like Snakes on a Plane, where they tried to build up the hype before it came out. This was a sci-fi movie, and the main people in it, of course, are Tara Reid and John Hurd. And it's, of course, there's a little global warming, about as much global warming message. No, less than a global warming message than Birdemic. Yeah, because that director is really serious about the environment.
Man. And
and the fact that, yes, there is a flood, and the flood causes sharks to come on to the California land, and of course while there's floods, and eventually there are tornadoes, and of course there are eventually sharknados. Well, of course, don't you hate when that happens?
Naturally,
right? So. the more pizza and beer you have watching this film, the better off it's going to be.
That's cool.
It is cheaply made because it's for the Sci-Fi Channel. You have actors that Tommy Wiseau would cast immediately, except for maybe John Hurd and Tara Reid.
Does it look better than Birdemic?
Slightly.
Okay.
Slightly. My only issue is, and I don't want people to call it, because somebody will think I'm a hater. You're going to look for it now.
Yep.
That's good. Here's the thing about Sharknado, and I would love to see this in a theater with people. No, let me do my theory first.
Here's the thing about Sharknado. It's Sharknado.
No, let me do my theory, and then you can play the bit. I would love to see this in a full theater with a group of folks. You know, a midnight movie of this at Landmark. And I know they did do a midnight movie of this a couple of weeks ago, which I unfortunately missed. It's one thing to make something direct for cable. You can go on direct for cable and see hundreds of just cheaply made movies, or the knockoffs that have been straight to DVD. Like, remember they made a movie, Snakes on a Train?
No.
Yeah, they made one. I think there's even in a film like Atlantic Rim, you know, something like that. Something quick and cheap, and it's the same. They try to make it the same plot as the big movie, only it's just a lot cheaper. So it's one thing to make it for Sci-Fi Channel. I get it. It's another, like Tommy, like The Room and like Birdemic, where you make it and you seriously try to push this into a theater. You know, with sci-fi, you have an automatic audience. So kind of like I think what the people with Snakes on a Plane was trying to do, you build out immediate cult family following right away. And you could do that with sci-fi and a title like Sharknado. That's something from the 50s. All you can do, you got the title, you go make the movie.
Yeah.
So, of course, when you hear a title like Sharknado, you're going to grab a 12-pack and go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's another thing if you're Tommy Wiseau or you're the director of Birdemic and you put this out into a theater and really press it. And really, you know, because you really put your blood, sweat, and tears and other horn-based rock bands from the 60s. Chicago. You know, and that's not questioning that the filmmakers of Sharknado, they worked a lot. These people worked very hard, but I sound like a parent of a child athlete.
All by themselves.
So I get it. I get it. Is it in the same category as The Room or Birdemic? I think it's the backup. They're in the backup squad. They're on the bench. I will say they're on the bench.
Okay.
Now you want to play that clip because I debunked the myth of Sharknado.
You drink your Haterade.
I do drink my Haterade.
Being a hater.
Yeah, I continue to be a hater. That's what I do. I can't wait to see her next week. all right, so we'll get to the other titles if there's time, but I do want to play my chat with actor, musician, and he allowed me to call him a Renaissance man, Tim Grimm, who is in the new DVD Blu-ray release of a film that came out earlier this year called At Any Price. Here I am with Tim Grimm. So, Tim, how often have you been called a Renaissance man?
A Renaissance man.
You bounce from stage, screen, TV, music. It's not a bad job to have.
I think half a dozen times I've been called a Renaissance man.
Okay, so now seven.
If you're going to make it seven, so be it.
Okay. Yeah. So for those who don't know, tell folks about the film At Any Price.
At Any Price was shot a couple of summers ago up in central Illinois in the Decatur area, up in real true farmland. And it was director Ramin Barani's fourth film, but his first real film with known, recognizable actors of some stature, like Dennis Quaid. And it's an interesting film. It's a personal film on a filming level. It's also a little bit of a political film in the sense that it's talking about contemporary farming issues like GMOs and marking seeds, selling seeds, etc.
And for those who haven't seen it, what is your big moment in the film?
My big moment is as Farmer Alex, one of Dennis's former seed customers. He's both a farmer and a seed salesman. My big moment is when he comes over to try to pitch me on his latest seeds, and we have a lovely little scene that ends up going out on motorcycles across the field.
How did you get involved with the project?
As most of these things happen, I'll get a call from my agent up in Chicago. I've been working with an agent up there for about 25 years at least, and we've had a great relationship. They'll call me when a casting director calls them about a project coming into town, and this was that same scenario, and I went up and did a reading on tape or film, and then the director came to town and requested to meet with me. And I ended up reading for three or four parts in that movie, which is always the light. You think your heads go up, you know, exponentially if you are asked to read for more than one part. But he pretty much I would be in the movie. He just didn't know where and how.
And how long before you found out?
This one, you've got a pretty good inkling. They'll tend to put you on what they call hold, which can last anywhere from 2 or 3 days to a couple of weeks. And I think this was technically a couple of weeks at least before we found out exactly what I would be doing in the movie. Although, as I said, I was pretty confident I would have some part in there.
And how long did your portion take?
I went up twice. First time I went up, I filmed 2 days on location at the farm and where we shot. And then the third time I went up, it was shot seasonally, and so we shot in the early part of summer, and then we shot the mid part of fall during harvest season. So I went up during harvest season as well for one of the final scenes in the movie, which is a big sort of a company picnic that a lot of the neighbors are invited to.
Now, did you get a chance to read the whole script, or did you just read the parts that you auditioned for?
In this instance, I did get to read the whole script. It's a good question. It's about at least half the time you don't get a whole script. You don't get a complete script. You certainly don't often get a complete script before when you're initially auditioning. The further along you go in the process, the more chance you've got of getting that whole script. But I did get a whole when I was cast. So I knew what was on paper, and it's a thing to follow and track and see where that goes and what develops out of that script, because some directors are real sticklers. Somebody like Michael Mann, who I've worked with twice on The Insider and on the Dillinger movie with Johnny Depp, he's a person who basically, if it's on paper, that's the way it will be done. And he really controls so many aspects of the film, from details about costumes to colors of vehicles and everything. He wants his hand in that. And other directors, you know, are much more loose with that. It's an interesting process there, therefore, to track it from beginning to end, see how it ends up.
What did you think of the film overall? Because I know it tackles issues that I don't think really had been addressed at the as far as what happens as far as sales and with other farmers.
Yeah, it's certainly, I don't think it's been, Matthew, I don't think it's been addressed in this kind of format. You're right. It has been addressed somewhat in documentary films, films like Food, Inc., and it's certainly been addressed in places like, you know, sections of the New York Times. But you're right, in terms of a commercial film, feature film, it's not been. And I think it's a pretty good job. I do remember when we had a week and a half run here down in Columbus when the movie was first available, and I did serve talkbacks with audiences here, and there were some questions of confusion about the seeds and the corn versus soybeans and the GMO issues. he tries not to make the film all about that, and therefore I think that it does raise some questions that aren't quite answered. I think, you know, overall the film does a fine job, you know, kind of balancing the family story and the political side of agribusiness. I don't know, you've read some of the early reviews that came out or not from the festivals when it first showed a year and a half ago. But they were really interesting mixed. Like some of the reviewers just said, this is Death of a Salesman meets Griff the Rat. And some people said, you know, it's Dennis Quaid's best performance. Others said he was horrible. So I couldn't wait to see it, you know, to kind of make up my own mind.
Well, I like the fact, I think when you have polarizing opinions, that seems like it's, you, no matter what, you've made a bigger impact. I think being mediocre is probably even worse than being bad.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
And I remember watching it and thinking, it was funny you mentioned Death of a Salesman and Grapes of Wrath. I kept thinking of it as almost a Shakespearean tragedy. And without giving away anything, the film sticks to its guns. I don't think there was a focus group saying you should change this, you should change that.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. And without giving anything away either, anything specific, I had several people comment at the talkbacks down here that it's relentless, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In some regards, it is relentless. And, you know, if one is looking for a, quote, feel-good movie, and depending on one's definition or expectations of hope in film, you know, you got to be... You got to be open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that. I like your kind of analogy with Shakespeare as well, because you know, we look back at a Shakespearean play or a work and we go, wow, these are life and death issues, and Hollywood tends to dramatize it a particular way that aren't as gritty and down to earth and real seeming, and this one is very real, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe why it's unsettling for some people.
Now, of course, the film is out on DVD and Blu-ray. Have you got a copy of it yet?
I don't have a copy yet. I just was in my red box and I saw the big ad for it. So,
good.
Yeah, I'll have to get a copy one of these days.
You're not hanging out in front of the red box, right? Just suggesting?
No, well, it is, yeah. Right, what's next? No, I'm not hanging out.
And there isn't a Tim Grimm portion of your library at home?
There is sort of, you know, I have real mixed feelings about that. You know what I mean? But I think like a lot of actors and performers there, you know, we have to have some amount of ego to just survive. And the balance for me, at least, and a lot of people with actually a true level of shyness and what am I doing here? And why am I doing this? So it's, I do, and I started to do it when the kids got older, have a little library, because there's really now close to a dozen films that I've done, and I've got a bunch of the television stuff that I did also on DVD, movies and stuff like that. So it's interesting, and occasionally we'll go back and look at that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Now, this is your second time with a Dennis Quaid film. Do you have a connection with him, or is it just work?
Not really. You know, when we did The Express, I reminded him. It's actually sort of the third time, because when I graduated from high school, I graduated in '78, and that summer after high school, before I went to college there in Richmond at Earlham College, I saw a notice in the local paper. They're casting bicycle racers for this new movie called Breaking Away.
Of course.
And I actually hopped on my bike in Columbus, and I was doing a lot of centuries, 100-mile rides. And I hopped on my bike and rode over and met the casting director for Breaking Away, and ended up getting in a couple of those racings, and played an extra in a couple of other scenes. And it was kind of my taste of that, or foot in the water of that. Technically, it's maybe my third movie with Dennis Quaid.
So we'll have to press pause next time we watch it.
Oh, big time. You need super slow-mo. Yep.
See, this is fun.
Freeze frame.
This is fun. This is like the Hoosier story, where I think they've had about 500 extras, but about 20,000 people have said they've been in Hoosiers. But, you know, yeah. we'll look for you on pause.
Yeah.
Now, I was, of course, doing research, and I love the fact that watching The Insider and Backdraft is research. But going through your IMDb file, it's great that you have a number of actual character names over job descriptions in your resume.
To get a character name is sort of important to me anymore, you know. Occasionally the movie where, you know, the second Chicago cop, second East Chicago cop or something is what we ended up doing in the Dillinger movie. And basically, I'm not going to complain about that because even with the best freeze frame, I don't think you'll ever find me in that film. We had a nice scene, Christian Bale, and that whole thing is gone. That whole segment of the movie is gone. It's right before Dillinger gets shot. And what can you do?
Right,
and I learned that early on, back in shooting Clear and Present Danger, and I had probably three other sizable scenes with Harrison Ford that just the two of us that were cut from the film, and I'm not complaining about screen time in that movie at all because there's a nice amount, but I did learn that you have no control over that. But I also have learned over the years that I like to have a name, you know. Give me a name.
So long as your name is on the check as well.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
Now, I know you worked with Michael Mann twice. Did you get Public Enemies because of your work in The Insider, or was that through the agent as well?
No, it helped a lot. Michael Mann, when I did go in for an initial taping, and when Michael went through those tapes, he was aware that I was working on the Chicago market at that point. And so I ended up going in a couple more times. There was one slightly larger part, a pretty good part actually, that I was up for until the very last minute. And they cast somebody very, very physically different than me for that other part. But he was gunning for me in a positive way. I think he wanted to be able to use me in that film in some capacity. So that was a nice result of having worked with him before.
Now, I watched The Insider last night preparing for this, and this is one of those films that you get sucked in immediately, even if you're channel surfing and you feel you should devote 20 to 30 minutes watching it. How long did it take to shoot that? And I'm always thinking of the sequence where you and the other actor are following Russell Crowe from the living room to the bedroom.
Right, right. That took, we actually shot that pretty quickly, and I want to say that whole sequence actually from the, and maybe our car pulls up and we're going across the lawn into the house till the time we leave. I think we're on that probably 8 hours, 8 or 9 hours. So not bad, you know. I mean, it's not terribly long. We shot that in a day.
Nothing Kubrick-like.
No.
And I guess, can you tell folks what you remember most about working on Backdraft?
Backdraft was cool. It was my first, real big feature film. A couple of independent films before that, and Backdraft was this. Everything was in a way compressed for me because I'm in a medium sized room with Robert De Niro and Donald Sutherland, you know, basically sitting across the table from two guys. And I did pinch myself a couple of times that day. We shot that a couple of days. I pinched myself both days, you know, and I remember. I think the morning of the second day, and I'm walking down the hallway, and I just De Niro coming down the hallway toward me, you know, and he's, you know, he fiery, intense, and really staying into character, and got that sort of serious, almost glum look on his face, and you know, as I walk by, I'm thinking, do I say something? You know, we worked one day together, and we're going to work today, and you know, and he looked up at me and said, "Hey," and then nodded, and walked on down the hall. You know. Robert De Niro's an eye to me. I was, in the beginning of this, so it was a lot of fun.
A title I was curious about because I have not seen it, but I have talked to, I've had one of my first guests on the film show was F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What was it like working on Joshua?
Oh, he was delightful. It was a lot of fun. It was almost a hoot for campy for me because. I'm playing a bishop, and I'm wearing the long robes the entire time. And we have a scene where he comes into my office, and pleads a particular case. And I'm the guy with a fair amount of humor in that scene. And he was delightful. He mm-hmm. was one of those people there, and they're out there who are just, you know, really regular, everyday guys who take into account, you know, I'm a well-known person, F. Murray Abraham. You are not, you know, but I'm going to treat you just like my best friend. It's interesting because you really get an idea of personalities in this business, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But he's a working guy.
Yep, exactly. So. Yep.
Now, how often have you had your music used in TV or movies?
When I was back in the day in the early '90s, when I was on Reasonable Doubts on NBC for 2 years. In the second season, after the first year ended, I was disbarred as a lawyer. I was divorced by my wife, but I came back second season out of prison and followed my dream, which was to be a blues singer on the series.
Mm-hmm.
That was the character's dream. So I actually did two episodes with a barroom blues band. And played in two of those episodes. And I also had another, I think, so I had three episodes of that show. But other than that, on film, no. I actually pitched to Ramin some of my farm song material for Benny Price, but they had already set their sound designer and the music person for that show. So didn't work.
Well,
I keep trying.
Exactly. What else you got to lose?
Right.
Now, I'm not going to ask how much, but how often do checks pop up in the mail?
They're really on a quarterly basis, pretty much.
Okay.
Some things can come in loosely, like I get at odd times residuals that are foreign residuals, and they'll come in about, I can tell it's a pink envelope, and it's an explanation sheet of perhaps all the S's, Switzerland and Sweden, and the Sudan or someplace are going six of the movies of the week that I shot, you know, mm-hmm. 10 years ago. And they don't add up to a lot, put it that way, when they're foreign stuff. But, yeah, it's probably four times a year I'll get a series or batches of checks pretty much from everything I've ever done. And it's a nice perk of being an actor. They do get smaller and smaller, however, as time goes on. But it's kind of like Christmas money.
Tad Robinson calls them hello checks.
Yeah.
Because that's what you say when you pop it open.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, exactly. Very sweet.
So what are you working on next?
I'm heading over to Ireland in about a week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm leading a tour of about 20 music fans of mine, 10 days. And from there, I go with my wife, son, and a Dutch fiddle player to the Netherlands, the UK, Germany, and Italy for about 6 weeks of touring music.
Not a bad life.
I'm not going to complain about that one. And then in the winter time, I'm going to go to Oslo Rep Theater in Sarasota, and we're going to remount The Grapes of Wrath, which we did at IRT many years ago.
Well, Tim, I really appreciate your time, but I'm curious, do you have a DVD copy of Steel Magnolias?
No, I have got a VHS copy.
Better than nothing.
Exactly. You've not seen it, have you?
No, I was checking IMDb, and that was that the very, very first thing you did, TV-wise?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
What do you remember, Jackson?
Which is what we named. I remember. That happened in a whirlwind. I was, again, my Chicago agent called, said they are shooting a pilot for Steel Magnolias. And I was aware of it as a play, and I think I was aware of it as a movie. And they want to make a television series, and can you come in? It's one of those, can you come in tomorrow and be put on tape? Because this thing is going to go very quickly. I went in, and I did a taped audition. And they, like, overnighted it. I stayed in Chicago, and then they wanted an adjustment, so which means that the director wanted to see something slightly different or maybe a different scene. I gave them the adjustment, and they said, okay, you are going to fly out tomorrow to L.A. to meet the director and the producer. And if you get it, they're only going to see two or three people. If you get it, you will immediately fly down to Natchitoches, Louisiana, and begin shooting. And the story with this piece was that, which I found remarkable and kind of amazing and kind of ludicrous at the same time, is that they could not find the actor they wanted to play Jackson in Los Angeles. And they were widening the scope, but they'd gotten so far that production was already scheduled. So I went out, met with the director, met with the producer, and they hired me. And the next thing I knew, I was in Natchitoches working with, you know, Cindy Williams and Lane Stritch and Polly Bergen. Just an amazing, you know, assortment of women down there. And I felt very lucky.
Well, Tim, thank you for representing the Midwest on that one. And in general.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you for what you're doing, too, out here in the Midwest.
We do what we can. That's Tim Grimm, actor, singer, and fun guy. And he appears in the film At Any Price, which is out on DVD and Blu-ray. Go check it out. One of the top surprise films of 2013. So it's a real movie, and it's really good. So. Sorry to quote Elmore Leonard. Now, Kobe, you were asking me during the interview, because I have a new piece of audio to share with you. Because we were talking about the logistics of Sharknado, and hopefully on a future film sociology, we'll break down Sharknado even more, because it's like post-game analysis. So as I was talking about the CG and the acting and the storyline, you said
what I gathered, you were saying that it's not as hilariously bad as The Room and Birdemic.
Right. But you, and
making
so,
it
a better
movie.
And my response to that is...
No. That's not what I said.
Thank you, Don Johnson in Django Unchained. I do want to get to Dead People We Like, but I don't think we have time for the audio. But David Frost, the famous English interviewer, journalist, best known for Frost Nixon. So, and I was reminded that the very first film sociology back in January of 2009, besides having Ed Johnson Ott as my guest, who will hopefully be on the show next week. I think he's committed. So we'll break down Austin Land, among other things. But the first film we reviewed that week was Frost Nixon. Great performances by Frank Langella, who was nominated for Best Actor that year, and to Michael Sheen, who played David Frost, directed by Ron Howard. Go check it out. It's a lot of fun. And I always thought of the Frost Nixon tapes as the interview equivalent of a heavyweight boxing match. So that is out there. So, Kobe, we also have some other news. We talked about Sammy Terry. He's going to be back on the show at the end of September, and he's got a show coming up at the end of September. It is a live rock and roll show.
Yes, Sammy Terry's Rock and Roll Nightmare Stage Show with special guest Redzilla at Roban Park in Greencastle, Saturday, September 28th.
And the horror convention is going on this weekend as well.
But
and then also, the Midnight Movies were announced at Landmark Cinemas. Mm-hmm. And I know they're showing Killer Clowns from Outer Space, Shaun of the Dead, Nightmare on Elm Street,
yep.
And the other one. And the other film. That fourth film.
Hang on.
Anyway, every Friday and Saturday night in October at Landmark Cinemas, Keystone Arts. So that will be a lot of fun as well.
Here we go. We've got... Okay.
You're scrolling down the Landmark webpage as we know
yes.
it.
Yes. October 4th and 5th, A Nightmare on Elm Street, 11th and 12th.
The original.
Yes. Killer Clowns. That's Clowns with a K from Outer Space. Big Top, Big Shoes, Big Teeth. October 18th and 19th, Shaun of the Dead. And the 25th and 26th, Trick or Treat.
That's right. That had cameos with Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne. Shaun of the Dead, that might be one we could drag you to. Oh, come on. Has Bianca seen it? Has Fair Sweet Bianca seen it?
I don't know. I think she has,
you know what?
But I'm not sure.
Going into this marriage, you should find out.
I'm kind of disappointed because I was hoping that they would bring back Lebowski for the fall.
Yeah, but it's October.
That's what they did last year, and that was really cool.
I know, but they wanted to stick with the more horror-centric. So hopefully next summer, Lebowski, The Room, and Miami Connection.
Lebowski!
That's right. Okay, so I guess we have enough time for Words to Live By.
It is people!
That's terrible.
You're terrible.
Zardoz has spoken.
All right. We're off to Sun King. We're at Penrod. I'm at Penrod tomorrow. And then Bachelor Party tomorrow night.
Woo!
Oh, God. Go Lions Sunday, please. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
We go. Good night, Fort Myers. See you soon.